Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. If you've heard composer Rob Capello before, you know he has a true gift for helping us all appreciate what makes the music that we love so great. And this weekend, he's going to turn that talent to Christmas music, and actually a specific subset of Christmas music. On Sunday, Rob will be performing at the New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall at 3 p.m. It's presented by the Celebrity Series of Boston, and you can find out more info about it on our website, radioboston.org. But don't run to your computer or smartphone to snag tickets right now, because right now, that's Rob playing, and he joins us here in Studio 3. Rob, welcome back to Radio Boston.
It's so great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I actually kind of just want to sit and listen to you play for the next few minutes.
I've been waiting for somebody to say that for me all my life.
All right, we don't have a ton of time, because if we did, you'd just keep playing. But let's start with your show this weekend. It's called What Makes It Great? Dreaming of a Jewish Christmas. So tell us about that.
Well, you know, one of the most amazing things I discovered was almost all of our most famous Christmas songs, the one that we've known for our all lives, were actually written by Jewish composers. I mean, that's a sort of a strange fact, that these songs that have become kind of the soundtrack of the world's most widely celebrated Christian holiday were all written by Jewish composers.
So why do you think that is, and why do most people not know that?
You know, I think one of the things that's interesting is it's really a story about pogrom, prejudice, poverty, immigration, assimilation, and the powerful creative imaginations of an extraordinary group of songwriters who are trying to find their way into an American culture. You know, first of all, lots of roads into American culture were blocked for these Jews, but they wanted to become part of that American world. And so what they did was they looked around, they listened around, and they created the soundtrack of secular Christmas. You know, before that, really before 1941 and 1942, when we got White Christmas, which was kind of the foundational sort of center of all of these secular Christmas songs were religious. The holiday was really about Christ, and it was a religious holiday, but it was really these Jewish composers who invented secular Christmas. But it wasn't only them. You know, interestingly enough, the term Judeo-Christian tradition was actually invented by the military, who wanted to forge interreligious bonding among soldiers. It became patriotic to celebrate Christmas. In fact, rabbis advocated Jews celebrating Christmas, and Franklin Roosevelt declared one day a year, only one day, Christmas Day, as the day that the plants and factories would close in 1942. So it was all part of becoming American, assimilating, becoming part of that American dream, and it was Jewish composers who invented the soundtrack Christmas.
It's an incredible piece of history, and one I'm guessing, you know, most people don't know about.
Right.
So let's pair that now. You know, I've heard interviews with you in the past. You do this incredible job of breaking down these songs. I'm dying to hear you do one of them. I think one of the ones you're going to do on Sunday that you've prepared for us today is I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas.
Well, it is the foundational cornerstone. You know, before this piece, everybody thought, why write Christmas songs? It would only be one day a year seasonal songs. There'd be no money in it whatsoever. But this became...
That is kind of a good point, now that you mention it.
Publishers said, forget it. No one's interested. But this became the top-selling piece of music ever written. And in fact, to come full circle, it's even been recorded in Yiddish.
Oh, my gosh.
So, but what makes the actual song so great? Okay, so here's the opening, the famous opening. Dreaming of a White Christmas. You know, one of the things I try to get across in all these programs, whether it's on radio or live, is that the difference between good and great is both enormous and infinitesimal. It's hundreds of small, tiny choices made by a composer, note by note, rhythm by rhythm, and word by word, measure by measure. So I'm going to just remove some of the great details of these opening four bars. It could have sounded like this. This is almost White Christmas. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Now, every single note is spectacular. Instead of this boring opening chord, he adds one note which gives you all the warmth of the season. Ordinary Berlin. Then instead of this, every note is special. Dreaming. That's like sort of robbing your hand on a foggy window. Just that one difference between dreaming of a and dreaming.
It's incredible. It's like the difference between a military march and my dreams.
Absolutely. The dream is literally in those tiny changes. Here's ordinary. White Christmas. Ordinary. White. Listen to this Christmas. That is a spectacular Christmas. Just a few notes. Again, just continuing. He could have written this. Just like the ones I know. But he reaches one note higher, and all the yearning of the season is in that one note. Just like the ones. So much yearning. You know, an interesting fact is Berlin had one of his children die on Christmas Day in 1928. And for him, Christmas was always a painful day. He and his wife would always visit their child's grave on Christmas Day. And that yearning that you feel there is all in that one note. But also think of this moment in time. It's Christmas of 1942, the first Christmas in which the GIs are away from home. And all that longing for what they're missing to come back to this idyllic, mythic American past, is in that one note.
So the skeptic in me is like, dude, you can't put all of that in one note. But you do.
It's all about one note. I mean, listen, treetops glisten. It's one of the only images of Christmas. The whole song only has two images of Christmas. Treetops glistening and children listening to sleigh bells. Now, let me make treetops not glisten.
No, I want them to glisten.
Well, the treetops glisten. There's no glistening, but listen to one note. Treetops. That one note. Suddenly they're glistening. Now, children listening to sleigh bells could have been ordinary like this. Children listen. But listen to this descending line in the piano and the one minor chord on listen. Children, listen to this. I mean, all the pain, the yearning in that one note, just... I mean, that's what makes the song magic. Then, to hear the sleigh bells in the snow, the sleigh bells are literally in the piano part at the end. To hear sleigh bells while the voice is holding, the piano's going, the bells go ring-dong, ding-dong. I mean, that's what makes this song great. And then, the ending is spectacular. That's the basic idea of the whole song. We start to repeat the exact same melody for the second half. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, all the same with every Christmas card I write. But then instead of your tops glisten and then a leap down, now it goes, may your days be merry. And I mean, there is nothing better on earth than that. But here's again the double meaning of Christmas. Right on bright, he holds that note for 6 beats, longest note of the song. You get this beautiful bright, but then listen to this. It's that dark minor. We're bright, but then we remember back to that child in 1928.
Oh, no, I did. Oh, brought me back to the lost child.
And then the ending is spectacular. Though no one except our singers has ever sung the rhythms that Berlin wrote, up to this point in the song, every note has either been a single beat note or a held note. Long note, single, 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 long, single, single. The only dotted rhythm in the whole song is right on the word Christmases to make it jaunty and bright. And may all your, the one dotted note, Christmases, that one rhythm. And the last note is special in a way you would never guess. Follow this. In all tonal music, the home chord has 3 notes. No matter what key you're in, the home chord has 3 notes. There's what we call the root, the name of it, a C chord, a C, and then 2 other notes. The most conclusive version of that is when the melody plays the root note. These versions are less final. They're like commas or semicolons. This is a period.
Yeah.
This is a comma. This is a semicolon. There are 6 of those home chords in the piece. Mm-hmm. Every other one has either this or this in the melody. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. This or this.
Continuing to the next
Always
thing.
This. We never resolve. Only on the very last note of the song, on Christmases, do we get the home note. And not only does the song resolve, but in a way, metaphorically, all those GIs overseas get to return home, just like the song, to our home note, save for the very last note.
You know, I will often say after interviewing someone, I'll never see such and such the same way again. Usually there's a loss to that. But in this case, I'll never hear that song in the same way again, and I'm so glad.
Well, you know, that's really what the whole program is about. I'm taking all of these songs and giving all the backstory to them as well as the musical insight so that hopefully at the end of the program you will neither hear nor think about these songs in the same way. And believe me, the backstories are extraordinary. just to come and hear the backstory to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer would be worth the entire price of admission.
I've heard that you're not going to tell us
that. I am not going to tell
you. Any hints at all?
I will not. I will just tell you that the song is not what you think it's about. It's not about its bouncy melody, but I will tell you it's actually a parable about an outsider young Jewish boy.
Interesting.
And that's the key.
Yeah, now I got to come hear it.
Yeah.
All right, we've got about a minute left. So in that time, this is a big question, but in your mind, what makes a great Christmas song?
Well, I think one of the things that's really important is it's different over time. You know, there's a wonderful quote from Irving Berlin, and he says, songs make history, and history makes songs. Mm. In other words, if you want to understand American history, listen to its popular song. If you want to understand popular songs, listen to its history. So oftentimes, it's actually a moment in time that makes a great Christmas song. As I said, before White Christmas, no one wrote seasonal Christmas songs. It just wasn't going to be interesting enough. But this song, it first appeared on a Bing Crosby radio program on Christmas Eve 1941. No one paid any attention. It was 2.5 weeks after Pearl Harbor. But then, on that Christmas of 1942, when it was the first Christmas with the GIs away from home, suddenly this became the kind of idyllic world that they were missing. It became everything they were fighting for, a kind of why we fight anthem. It was what they were longing for. And suddenly it became a great Christmas song, not only because of the notes that I showed you, but because what it evoked at that particular moment in time. You know, when you hear other songs, sometimes we'll hear another song that happens at the end of the war, 1945, and then that's the song that touches the hearts and became the love ballad of the GIs returning home. So at different moments in time, different songs intersect with history, and it's a combination of the magical notes, note by note, rhythm by rhythm that I've shown you, and that moment in time and what the country needs, because these composers were inventing secular Christmas. Now they're the songs we hear everywhere, but remember, they were invented by Jewish immigrants trying to become part of the American dream, inventing America's voice.
On that note, are you willing to play us out?
I'd be happy to do it.
Let's do it. That's composer Rob Capello. He'll be performing at New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall, 3 p.m. Sunday. The concert's presented by the Celebrity Series of Boston, and you can find more information at our website, radioboston.org. And Rob has a book. It's called Listening for America, Inside the Great American Songbook from Gershwin to Sondheim. Rob Capello, thanks so much for coming in today.
A pleasure to be here.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.